and good morning. It's Wednesday, April 29th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Cellier in Tel Aviv. Oil prices are up for an eighth straight day amid reports President Trump is moving towards a permanent blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. And OPEC is reeling after the UAE announced that it's leaving the oil cartel after more than five decades. Ahmed Kouzaei, Gulf expert at the N7 Foundation, joins me to discuss the seismic shifts in the region. Hear our conversation in just a moment. And if you enjoy these updates, you can sign up using the link below. It only takes a moment. And if you'd like to sponsor Israel in 10, do contact us at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now the headlines. President Trump has warned Iran it had better get its act together amid reports he's planning to make a U.S. naval blockade on Iranian ports permanent. Trump says Iranian officials have told him they're desperate and in a state of collapse. Experts say Iran's oil storage capacity is almost full, and if production is forced to halt, it could cause lasting damage to its oil fields. Inflation in Iran has now surpassed 72%. And the United Nations says the regime has executed 21 people and arrested 4,000 since the beginning of the war. The IDF has confirmed that a civilian contractor working for the Israeli Defense Ministry was killed and his son injured in a Hezbollah drone attack in southern Lebanon. 44-year-old Amir Hujarat was operating machinery to demolish Hezbollah infrastructure near the group's stronghold in Bid Jebel when the strike occurred. The Iranian-backed group is increasingly using sophisticated FPV drones to target Israeli forces clearing a 10-kilometer buffer zone north of the border. Prime Minister Netanyahu has announced a new special project to counter Hezbollah's swarm and fiber optic drones, which have been bypassing traditional jamming systems. A new poll suggests that if former Chief of Staff Gadi Eisenkot joins a party formed by former Prime Ministers Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, it would win at least 41 seats in the Knesset, nearly double the 21 currently projected for Likud. Eisenkot has reportedly demanded a veto clause, giving him final say over major military action or agreements with religious parties. Without him, the Lapid-Bennett alliance drops to just 26 seats. Adding pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu, there are also reports of plans to form a breakaway faction within Likud. EU lawmakers are set to vote today on whether to freeze billions in funding to the Palestinian Authority, as new research revives claims that its school textbooks promote violence and anti-Semitism. Despite assurances from Brussels that reforms are underway, independent analysts say changes to the latest curriculum are minimal. That puts roughly 3.8 billion euros in EU support on the line. And earlier this week, the EU, which is the largest donor to the Palestinians, rejected an emergency liquidity request from the PA, noting it had already committed to a 1.6 billion euro assistance package through next year. Before we get to today's conversation, a quick thank you to our sponsors, Susie and Kerry Friedman, made today's episode possible. Now here's Ahmed Kouzaei. There are signs that President Trump is moving towards a permanent blockade on the Strait of Hormuz. How does that affect the Arab states in the Gulf?
The blockade as an idea to start with that was imposed initially by Iran on its own was a big problem. On one hand, if we take full force against Iran today, we will look at the sea mines being even implanted even more. So it will be impossible for anybody to use the strait. So the best thing was for Trump to do what he's doing right now. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's affecting all our economies. Based on that, we've seen the Gulf meeting, leaders meeting yesterday in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. Dealing with Iran with full force is the only way to go forward.
Let's talk about that shock move by the UAE yesterday. It is quitting OPEC after nearly 60 years as a member. Why did the UAE decide to do this now?
When it comes to OPEC, basically the member states normally utilize the resources as well as planning together to work out a proper planning. The United Arab Emirates, especially after the war, started to think internally rather than externally, thinking about what's good for it. Because of OPEC, the United Arab Emirates are producing between 3.2 to 3.5 million barrels per day. Once they leave OPEC, they are not binded by these decisions, so they will go for 5 million barrels per day. Basically, that will mean more income on one hand, as well as stabilizing on the long run the prices of oil and energy around the world. And the most important thing here is all the damage that was caused by the Iranian attacks on Emirates needs some cash. They need to rebuild. That will be the fastest way forward for them to do that.
Is this more about the UAE striking out on its own? It is a country that makes bold decisions. It was the first to sign the Abraham Accords. Is this more about Abu Dhabi moving out from under Saudi Arabia's shadow?
I don't see it this way. I see it the other way around. I think it's a Gulf states stance to move away from everybody who's not working well for them. We've seen how the Arab states dealt with the Gulf states during the war. Almost all Arab states, except for Jordan and Morocco, that took a heavy stance standing with the Gulf states. The others, either siding with Iran or going anti-Gulf even. I think that took the Gulf states to start thinking in a pragmatic way for the first time in their history to think of what's best for them.
So what do the Saudis make of this move by the UAE?
Frankly speaking, I don't think they will like. Saudi is heading the OPEC. I mean, they're chairing it. That's number one. Number two is the Saudi being the biggest country, especially in the Gulf and around the region. They want to make decisions together rather than people just branching out without taking, I'm not going to say consent, but taking others' opinions. There are things happening behind closed doors, especially they were meeting yesterday. So I'm sure they discussed that. What was the outcome, whether they like it or not? I'm not at place to say, but this is my personal stance.
We learned this week that Israel had sent Iron Dome technology and even troops to the UAE to help defend it against these attacks by Iran. What does this tell us?
Everybody was making fun of the Abraham Accords. Voila, we have something big on our hands today. This will change the way things are being conducted in the region. Things before the war won't be the same after the war. People are doing what works best for them today, which is understandable. This is the pragmatic way of running things.
Bahrain has been really at the forefront of trying to get international action against Iran. Why are they doing that? And have they paid a price for that?
Well, Bahrain has been paying the price for that for the past 130 years. Iran has been claiming Bahrain as its 14th state, not only during the reign of the Islamic regime, even during the days of the Shah. That was put to bed in 1971, when a UN vote took place, and it was decided that Bahrain is sovereign. Of course, the Shah respected that. That was brought back again in 1979 onwards by the Iranians. That's why they've been planting proxies. They've been instigating problems for Bahrain. So Bahrain has paid the price long overdue. I mean, Bahrain is heading the Security Council during the month of April, and that has put Bahrain at the forefront of all these. Bahrain is doing a good job at it, especially that we're documenting all these atrocities by the Iranians. We're cornering Iran internationally and diplomatically. It's a so-called ceasefire at the moment. But during that time, we are gathering the international community to take a proper, well-informed stance against Iran. On the long run, it will work out very good for Bahrain and the Gulf.
Ahmed, did the Arab countries ever imagine that Iran would attack them so violently and so directly?
Bahrain saw that coming a long time ago and was warning lots of Arab states. We stopped having diplomatic relations with Iran for the past 11 years because of their role in instigating the proxies, the sleeper cells, as well as the terrorist attacks happened within Bahrain over the past 15 years.
Do you see a division in the approach among the GCC states, perhaps with Qatar and Saudi on one side and the UAE, Bahrain, and even Kuwait on the other, taking a different approach?
Before the war, yes, that was the case. Yet after yesterday's meeting, there was a decision by all of the Gulf states to handle the Iranian threat in a unified front and to take it properly from this. Every state in the Gulf over the past 1 month have captured and arrested lots of terrorists and lots of cells beside Oman. But basically, it was decided that they have to deal with it properly and firmly.
To go back to President Trump's blockade, what will you be looking out for over the next couple of days about whether or not this will push Iran to accept a deal?
What Trump is doing is pressurizing Iran to the maximum. We've heard him yesterday talking that he received a call from Iran claiming that they have suffered a lot. It's believable because anybody who's been following what's happening, Iran used all its force, basically, on the Gulf, even more than on Israel. But since the last ceasefire, we've seen that the Iranians are losing their stance. We don't see them as strong. Even their statements are getting weaker. So this maximum pressure, I think it's in line with his direction. It's in line with his goals. And if they decided to take it to the next step, to fight another war or to continue the war, I think this will put Iran to bed for once and for all.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Be sure to sign up with your email and receive these updates daily. Goodbye.